Happy Monday.
Happy Monday. Welcome, Martin.
So, Martin.
Hello.
Thank you
so much for having me. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Probably going to be a bit jet lagged, but I'm doing okay. So, how was your weekend, Matt and Martin?
It was good. I'm actually in California for a family event right now, so apologies if the Wi-Fi is not great.
Okay. Your background looked different. I wasn't sure where you were.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. How about yourself, Martin? How was your weekend?
Yeah, my weekend was fantastic. I celebrated my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was like on the 14th. And I had a couple of friends. We met a couple of friends. We went to a tapas bar, then to another bar. And it was a fantastic evening.
Oh, nice. Is that Munich?
In Munich, yeah.
Nice.
Even a good friend from my hometown, 800 kilometers away, joined. And it was great.
Where's your hometown?
It's called Lüneburg. It's close to Hamburg, like south of it. And yeah, very small town. Most likely you haven't heard it when you're not from Germany.
No, never heard of it. So, but now we have. Now the whole world's heard of it. So that's awesome.
Finally it's out, yeah.
So Martin, for people who don't know who you are, do you want to give a quick intro?
Yes, very happy to give a quick intro. So I'm Martin Musiol. I'm a data scientist by training. I studied here, so I said already I'm from Munich. I studied at the Technical University of Munich, very much data science focused, machine learning focused. And then quite early, I went into consulting. I was a data science consultant, and there was at Frog Design, a design agency. And at this design agency, I stumbled upon a paper that was the initial paper by Ian Goodfella, which is called Generative Adversarial Networks. And that sort of like, you know, like it made me think in all kinds of directions and think about generative AI. And basically a couple of months later, I spoke about it on a conference in Milano. And so 2016, I titled it Generative AI, how the next advancements in machine learning improve the products we build. And since then I'm actually very generative AI focused. There was no proper business, so I had to also do like data science work. Like I was a data scientist, then at some point at IBM, then at Infosys Consulting. But I always talked and advocated for generative AI. I also 2018 I founded generativeai.net.
Nice. And that was a good way ahead of the curve.
Yeah, I think so too, and it's also being rewarded with a quite high ranking in Google, and I also launched the world's first online course on generative AI, so that's sick. Yeah, all of this. Now I also finished the book, and I quit my job to really go all in into generative AI.
That's the way to do it. That's awesome. Tell us about your book. We were talking about that before, but I think Matt and I always get a kick out of talking to authors and understanding more about the books. And why don't you tell us about that? What's it called?
It's called The Generative AI, Navigating the Course to the Artificial General Intelligence Future. This one here.
Oh, nice.
I have it, yeah.
Good looking book.
Yeah, thank you. It's published together with Wiley. Great partner along the way as I wrote it. As the title says it, its main focus is generative AI. Basically speaking about the past of generative AI, where it comes from. It's actually not so, the type of algorithms are new, and we have like a lot has happened, but for most people that haven't been in the space, they think it like it came from nowhere and it exploded and it was all of a sudden was there. But it actually started already in the 60s, yeah, with Eliza from Joseph Weizenbaum. He did the first sort of chatbot, which would recognize you say a sentence with family, and then it recognized family, and it asks a question related to this. It was like this early starts of all of this, and it was a long way until it reached where we are now. So I talk about the past. I talk about the present. What are the application fields? It's not only the language models and the ChatGPTs. It's also image generation. It is 3D object generation. It is video generation, music, sound, avatar. It really goes quite broad. Also AI agents. And then I look forward. Yeah, where is it going? And some Some say like AGI is the end point, but it's not the end goal, but it's a theoretical like concept definition that we might get there. Some even say we are already there, but we are all not very much aligned on this. And I try to give a certain clarity on what the what these concepts are, what we might still miss. Probably not an exhaustive list, yeah, because it's a theoretical concept. And then I even look a little bit, and I think for me this is the most exciting thing. What's next? Yeah, what is after AGI? Where could this go? What benefits could this bring with us? Of course, looking also at the potential challenges and dangers with it. Just to say a couple of things, it's ASI the AI expert community talks about, which is artificial superintelligence. And then you have also people like Ray Kurzweiler that speak about the singularity. Yeah, what's after that? And then for me, it's a very exciting topic to talk about.
So give us your definition of AGI, because this is a very controversial concept and there's a lot of debate about what it means and where we're going. And like you said, some people say we're already there and some people say we'll never really get there in the truest sense. So for you, what does AGI mean?
Yeah. So for me, AGI, so some speak of human level intelligence. I think it's a nuanced field. Yeah. On one hand, we have it's not a one-to-one comparison, because AI, generative AI, we see ChatGPT, it has a general knowledge that far exceeds most people. Yeah, that when it comes to just general understand or general factual knowledge. Yeah, if you ask a system like Perplexity AI, it has a factual knowledge of it has basically indexed the whole internet and put a language model on top of it, so it's really like an AI agent that is far more intelligent seemingly than a human. But then when it comes to problem solving and like maybe a novel way of problem solving that is necessary for things, then these systems they lack these capabilities. So I think an AGI is, of course, on one hand it has a huge knowledge plugged into it in whatever way, if it's a RAG system or an extended context window or then pre-trained. There are many ways how this can look like, how it can load information into its knowledge base, and but then is also able to solve problems that are maybe novel, and it might require a bit more extensive thinking, planning, reasoning, on a more extensive level. And this is where, when a certain critical threshold is reached, I think we can say, okay, now we see it's not just a 1-3, 1-5 step planning, is really, it lays out a whole project how to solve complex problems. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to find like a very hard definition, but this is my soft definition.
Yeah. You use the word threshold. What is that threshold, in your opinion?
So we see already with AI agents, such as Super AGI or Devin. If you heard about Devin AI, it's this AI software engineer, that it lays out a plan with like some 20 or so bullet points that it then works through it and fills and sort of like plans it and then executes accordingly. I think it needs to be like an order of magnitude more when we really like when I'm thinking okay, but in a cohesive, consistent, and higher quality way. Because these models also tend to be very ADHD-like, when they want to solve a problem, then they get sometimes lost in like minuscule things that are irrelevant. So with a greater focus on larger projects, yeah. I think then we go strongly into AGI. Oh, and also an important point. I don't think that AGI is purely on text. I don't think the text is enough only. Like we have already included images and video. Yeah, it's fair to say that GPT-5 will also have video capabilities. Yeah. And some say it already. I just finished my draft of my next newsletter, and there are rumors that it's coming out soon, and that some enterprises have even seen already GPT-5. But these are just rumors. But what I wanted to say, so we have already the mode of sound, video, images, and text, but there are so many more modes to plug into. Yeah, of course, in the digital realm. But also there's a physical interaction, yeah, the embodiment of an AGI with robots. This is a huge thing that is happening this year. We see Figure, I think, is a unicorn that collaborates with OpenAI. We see Tesla. Elon Musk says the long-term goal is, or the long-term product will be mainly the Optimus, yeah, the robot. So there's a lot happening, and NVIDIA also doubling down into robotics now. Because when we think how do we understand the world best is with interacting on all available channels, yeah? With smell is also part of it, and touch. And you don't actually, this is what Jan LeCun said, the chief AI scientist of Meta. He said he doesn't even believe that you need text to think. Yeah, it's, you can think with images, and in the same way, he doesn't believe that language models, like that, they are now mostly focused on text, but disregard or not focusing enough on other modes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
show you a video that I cut in Saudi Arabia. What was it? It was this. It was Mohammed. He's the one that got in trouble for the viral video of him. Getting a bit of handsy with a reporter, but okay. So I think they shut his audio off, and basically, and then there was another one here. So what I'm saying is, I think there's a lot of room for improvement. There was another robot. This is interesting. So you can see this robot. What is this? So there's a robot here, and there's a guy holding the one standing.
He
had to hold it so it wouldn't fall over. And then the next day we noticed that it was just chained up. So we're just like, oh, that's all it takes to stop the robot apocalypse. You just put them on dog chains and just, I think that it's, these were, again, I think more kind of, I don't think the company meant for these to be laughed at, but Mohammed, the robot, got himself in a lot of trouble. The video went viral on TikTok.
Yeah,
I think it was. I don't know, but joking aside, it definitely feels like this is. Well, it's interesting because Matt and I we live in this interesting world where we're more kind of the data people, but it feels like all the cool applications of quote AI are happening in stuff like robotics, computer vision, all the stuff where it's just taking more advantage of human senses. Seeing, hearing, you even mentioned smell, right? That's, I think, one where I've seen some startup activity in that, actually, which is pretty cool. So it's, I think it's going to be the killer apps, so it's cool seeing this. Except what?
I don't want to use the term killer app anymore, right? There's there are the AI doomers now.
Well, it depends. It depends if you're with the military or something, in which case you're probably all about it. But yeah, you're right, Matt. But what would you call
maybe
it?
You could speak to that, Martin. Like, what do you think about the AI doomers versus the AI optimists versus, you know, the Ray Kurzweils of the world who think that we're heading towards singularity and it's going to be massively beneficial versus, you know, kind of this quasi nuclear apocalypse that some people believe might happen?
Yeah. I also have a couple of more points to the point before, but to the doomers, I actually have also a topic on this in my book. And typically what we observe is, so I'm also elaborating in my ethical societal and ethical potential considerations in this one chapter. I'm basically going into various kinds of challenges to keep in mind. Yeah. And one is also the job losses, for instance. I think we could basically speak about every single one of them, but I think So for instance, when it comes to job losses, it doesn't come overnight and immediately. So it is a transition, and the pace of that transition is not dictated by the technological velocity of, that's one part of it, but the companies, I'm also coming from consulting, right? I've mm-hmm. Developed many AI projects with different companies from different sectors, and they have their pace, and this pace will not get faster, and it's not everything happening overnight.
Yeah.
And also they like, I would say, even though business is like a very numbers driven thing, but still there is a social component to it, and like putting mass firing happens, yeah. In some companies we have seen that, yeah. But I don't think on the broader scale cross sectors, I don't think it happens so fast. So I would, and also I think, and that's the good side that I'm seeing, is that typically the new jobs that are coming up are better than the old ones. They are less repetitive. You require more the human element, and I think for the majority of the people, this is better. Maybe not for all, but on average, the new jobs are better than the old ones, I think. Yeah. There are many other things. Yeah, we also challenges to look at is biases. Biases could be amplified that have been in the training data. So when certain ethnicities are being benefiting in an unfair way, then this could be amplified in the AI models afterwards. There are ways to cope with these problems. Mm. So, yeah. Do you pick up some doomer stories and what people are afraid of, and have you recognized this? This basically.
Oh, where to begin? Yeah, I get a lot of, I mean, I think the stereotypical doomer comment is Terminator, or some version of that. I actually feel like here's my opinion on my scenario for how AI destroys humanity. We there will be so much misinformation and craziness in all the things that we consume, whether that's social media, news articles, whatever, that we actually just destroy ourselves. It doesn't need to do anything. It's just, it's a gigantic propaganda machine. And the thing is, it didn't even intentionally do it. Like we're just, mm-hmm. I mean, I would say that the media landscape and the just the way we consume information over the years has, I would say, gotten quite dangerous, actually. Right. Mm-hmm. And I only expect that to get worse with to the point where you either have a couple options. If you're rich enough, you can probably purchase media that's been curated, or you simply just leave, right? Yeah. But I like I said in prior episodes, I view this as very much like sort of weaponization of information, and I actually think this is how it all goes down. So, but I don't know, that's one scenario, but I'm also pretty, I don't know, I'm not optimistic generally. I tend to be fairly realistic about things. Matt knows me well enough. I'm not a doomsdayer. But per se, Matt may actually push back on that, but
it depends on the day.
Yeah. I don't know, Matt, what about you? What do you think? Are you, where are you on the sliding scale of techno-optimist and to doomsdayer?
I tend to agree with you. I think a lot of massive social changes have already happened just due to the internet and smartphones, and frankly, people like Joe and I and you, Martin, and a lot of people listening to the show, whereby being data-driven, quote-unquote, and following business KPIs, we create these huge amplification loops of like human media, and that is a big concern. On the other hand, on the optimist side, to what Joe was saying, humanity has adapted to all kinds of changes in the past. I guess the pessimistic side is that we seem to be struggling a bit more to adapt to all of the changes created by social media and ubiquitous technology.
Yeah. So does AI help us do amazing things better or dumb things faster? I don't know.
And so far, it's been the latter, I would argue, right? With social media, it's like, is it really helping our society? Not in general.
Yeah. We're on LinkedIn, though, the best social media network on the planet,
right.
For sure.
LinkedIn is the exception, yes.
But I also have a point to the social media, or basically to the news generation and consumption. So, there is also video generation will be indistinguishable to human videos being generated, and the same with the text. And misinformation can happen now a lot. But at the end of the day, what is critical is that what is important is that the critical thinking just stays ahead of the laptop, yeah, that in front of the laptop. No, you don't outsource it. And these days, the checking the sources and if it's credible and you trust where this information comes from, this is just so much more important nowadays. And it was always important, yeah, because also before AI, before this AI wave that we experienced. There were also lots of misinformation, but then it was more human written. But still, you have to check the resources. Yeah, how legit is it? Are there actually studies that back it up? Or some are the resources that the person is writing on, is that actually legit? And also that the resources are diverse enough where you are like consuming your information from. This all stays much more true now than ever before, mm-hmm. I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's... Yeah, I don't know what happens. I just sit around reading books all day anyway. So I'm not the only social media I'm on is like LinkedIn. I got Instagram. I went back on that more because of Threads, just to see what that was about. I had to set up an Instagram account, and I mm-hmm. have really dumb stories on there, but that's it. So let me see. There's some questions here. Jason Taylor asks, "What automated robot do you want to see first? Optimus Prime, Terminator, Rosie the Robot?" Very serious question. So, Martin, which one?
Which robot I want to see first? I mean, I like the robots that take care of elderly. So, at least in Germany, there is a huge shortage of personnel in that space. I would love to see that happening like sooner. What else? And then basically, humanoid robots. It can be the Optimus, yeah, Tesla Optimus or Figure or mm-hmm. how they are all called, or some there in Japan there are also plenty of robots. Lots of robots over there. Yeah, I think they can be very helpful in our daily lives, cleaning, heavy lifting of things. I think that's a beautiful future to look ahead.
Oh yeah, super helpful. Yeah, I used to work with elderly people when I was younger, and that's literally a backbreaking job. Yeah. And it's hard work. Yeah.
And low pay in Germany, at least.
Low pay everywhere. Yeah. Low pay. I think it's probably the most rewarding job I ever had, but at the same time, just unspeakably bad in other ways. Not even going to get into it. Pablo has a question here. Do you think that any kind of generative AI will develop machine learning solutions at some point? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I see generative AI more into the operational aspect of any organization more than just doing forecasting / prediction of any kind.
I absolutely think that they will develop AI solutions, machine learning solutions. It's already happening, or not on a very high, super high quality human level quality, yeah, but it's already happening. Devin AI has shown that made by Cognitive or Cognizant.
No, Cognition.
Cognition, yeah.
Yep.
With a very super smart founder. Scott Wu, yeah. And so this is already happening, and it is clear that's definitely one trend where AI development is focused on, yeah, the AI agents especially. So also one thing I wanted to mention is one great thing of generative AI is the improvement of machine learning models, of existing machine learning models, through synthetic data. Yeah, generative AI not only develops, can in the future for sure, and now already to a degree, developed the solution, the AI solutions, the machine learning architecture, whatever is needed, object detection, etc. But also improved the training data, yeah, and push the accuracies and recalls, yeah, and precisions up a lot. We have seen that NVIDIA has done it already. 2018, they have shown how with MRI images, because you have with MRI brain scans tumor scans, you had privacy issues, and then they were taking a case where there was rare cancer, and with that very limited original data space, they had a object detection algorithm that detected it 64% of the time correctly. But with synthetic data infusion, they jumped it up to 82%. That's cool. These are huge wins that are coming. And also Alpha Geometry by DeepMind, Google DeepMind, they have developed an AI model that basically can solve geometrical mathematical problems on a human gold medalist level. So there are these geometry Olympics, and a human gold medalist in this field is already someone who has really, really trained a lot, yeah, to get to that level. There's like the top 50 of the world, and they have trained an AI model purely on synthetic data. So this is, I think, the bigger push on machine learning performance than even the development itself.
Yeah. So what do you think about the feedback loop problem that's been discussed in a lot of research papers, where if models train on their own output or train on the output of other models, they degrade over time? And so I was actually talking to Andy Petrella about this recently, and we were discussing how a lot of people use ChatGPT for coding now, but do we get to a future where we start losing that ability as humans to code, and then eventually the models start training on their own code, and then they just degrade and they lose the ability to code? I don't know. What do you think about that?
So first of all, I think coding will transition into a natural language. You formulate a thought, you have to logically go through what exactly you want. So then our capability of phrasing the problem in enough detail is very important. Do we still need to code as we do it now? I don't think so. And even Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, says that in the future, everyone will be a coder, will be able to develop products by phrasing the problem you want to solve, and like the phrasing the solution in that way. And you say now, so when we start coding, or when the models basically continue coding and then later they keep basically training on their own code that they have developed, I can see that. I'm not fully sure. Because we are already at a certain level of code that they are trained on, and this can solve. This code that we have is good enough for training models to solve already in the first degree. But then later, will it get worse? So yeah, maybe I think maybe temporarily yes. Long term, I think the way is up.
So we'll solve this problem broadly, basically. We'll figure out how to solve this feedback loop issue.
Yeah, there are also many ways to go about problems like this. There is a new company in Japan. They are called Zakana AI. They raised $30 million. What they have developed is AI models, or a language model, but basically they call it breeding of language models. They take the best elements of all the different language models, mix it together, but in a very very scientific and in-depth way. They fuse these language models and have 7 billion small, very strong language model. Yeah, and what I want to say with that is that there are so many ways, so many different angles to look at the problem. And I don't think we will only have our language models that being trained through other language models, and it's just that linear way, and then it degrades on that linear axis of developing and training. I think it probably will degrade but taking new architectures into account, new data types, different modes, multi-sensory, multi-modal, and multitasking, and many of this, I think we can probably solve in the long run these problems.
So you got some more questions here. It's good. You got a lot of questions. I think that's thought-provoking. Donovan Allen asks, it's going back to the doomsday stuff, but I think it's a relevant question. What are your thoughts on companies using AI and PII to make hiring decisions? And does that data hold up? Ethical? The future? By the way, Donovan, we have to go climbing pretty soon, so hit me up. Anyway, what do you think of his question?
So the question is... The hiring through AI, yeah? So I think hiring through AI, I have actually seen already two products that do it. They match job roles to job description to applicant and or pool of applicants. And what I have seen is that it's very well thought through. So on one hand, you can not only take the CV into account, but you can also like have an interview and then have the transcript of the interview. You can based on that, of course, the question have to be thoughtful, but you can then afterwards use a language model, yeah, like ChatGPT or some whatever, and analyze within a reasoned way. You can get is it a good cultural fit for the company? Then you state what the cultural values are. And why, yeah, this person could be a fit. Are the things that have been said, are this factually correct things, yeah, or is it just some stories? And you can basically along many parameters, you can then analyze that conversation and profile fits to a job description, and also the job description can be very large. And you might even find the promise is that the match is better than by a human. So I think long term this might also be a solved problem. If we are there yet, I don't think so. Probably there are some early errors that are being made by companies relying too much, which is also one part of my chapter 5, ethical concerns and societal implications, dependency on AI. So nuanced answer.
It's very nuanced, but so are things like ethics. I think as Matt and I have talked about it on the show in the past too, I think it's very context dependent and geographically dependent right? So what you consider ethical in the Western world, there might be different versions of that somewhere else, or that doesn't exist. That's just how it is. So,
right.
So it's very, very nuanced. Varun asks, will data engineers be responsible for machine learning work, generating synthetic data, et cetera, in the future? Are you seeing this transition happen yet?
Sorry, can you say it again?
Sorry. The question is, will data engineers be responsible for machine learning work, generating synthetic data, et cetera, in the future? Or are you seeing this transition happening?
I think data generation, synthetic data generation can definitely be part of a data engineer. Mm-hmm. It's definitely good to know how that works effectively. And then it was like the question was to transitioning, yeah? To, if it's transitioning to data science or what was it? Yeah.
Yeah, are you seeing this happening yet, basically? And I think kind of the question is, are data engineers moving more into machine learning work, right? So,
I mean, more and more applications are machine learning applications. And I think synthetic data generation will play a crucial role. I would say yes. It started already and it continues.
I think we see the same thing, Matt. So,
yeah. I mean, I've kind of been vocal about this in the past. I think data engineers are going to have to do more to adopt AI-based tools, maybe not generative, but things like analyzing for hate speech and analyzing freeform text and analyzing unstructured data. I think increasingly that has to involve these kinds of tools, right? In the past, we've done it with fairly simple filters and such, but that's just not going to be sufficient to compete in the future.
Well, in data engineering, I feel like that's a, the scope of the work changes a lot. I think too often people equate maybe what's called analytics engineering or, you know, traditional analytical type engineering. It might have been ETL developer, BI developer back in the day, with data engineering. But there's a lot of other facets to things. I'm kind of tired of the argument that we only focus on analytics. There's a whole other world out there of unstructured data, machine learning that if you're not getting on the program now, I wish you the best of luck in your career going forward. Right. But I'm getting actually like really sick and tired of data engineering only being associated with the analytical aspect. Again, open your eyes, people. There's a big world out there. It's not just about structured data.
Yeah. And I mean, the roots of modern data engineering are very much in unstructured data, right? Like Google, you know, PageRank, it's scraping the web and analyzing these massive sets of data, looking at links, but also looking at the raw text to understand intent and such. That goes way, way back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So off the soapbox on that one. let me see. We'll get another question for the audience. We'll rant about something else. This is Ku Pingchun, actually from Singapore. How do we make AGI being able to bring in relevant context into analysis? I think this is a sort of attack onto his question. What in your opinion is a realistic way to build understanding into AI?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I touched upon it already in the beginning that this multimodal multitasking is also a part. Yeah, the parallel learning of multiple tasks. So basically solving problems with multiple input streams. So multimodal, multitasking, and multisensory. There is olfactory sensors, yeah, like sensors, tactile sensors that can be taken into account, gustatory sensors. There are also sensors that humans don't necessarily have, such as compass and infrared and ultraviolet. These are all like things and information that can be taken into account. But when it comes to the core of the AGI architecture, I think Meta is on a very good path here with Jan LeCun, where they want to basically have like a representation, a joint representation of the world of various objectives that one has. Okay, this is a bit abstract, but they basically try to see. Okay, you have visual information and textual information, and sort of finding this joint in this joint space. Abstracting the concept. That's basically what it is. So multiple input streams. In the joint representation, finding the concept of finding the in an abstract way the concepts, it's called the JEPA, and this conceptualization is one thing, and then we actually don't fully know what the path forward is. Yeah, there are many floating points or ideas that are being being tried out, but fully we don't know yet. Yeah, that's the truth. But the conceptualization is key, and multimodality and multi-embodiment sensors, so forth.
Mm-hmm. The word understanding was an interesting one too in that question, because I feel like, as we've seen with advancements, with AI in the past, we're talking like even AlphaGo, for example, right? Being able to figure out solutions of problems that humans would have just never even thought of. Like it makes me wonder, what else it's gonna, where this is gonna go in ways that we probably don't understand it actually, and there's nothing to understand because it just behaves differently.
Yeah,
and it does things differently.
Right, and even if AI gets better in tasks that we were good at, like for in chess, Deep Blue has already. Like that was many years ago when IBM's Deep Blue won against Kasparov, and no human can be as good as an AI can be or as a program. Mm-hmm. But anyways, now more and more people are playing chess. Yeah, this is like
it's popular.
It's, it's not destroyed. It's like it's actually a very thriving sport. Yeah, here are like chess clubs in Munich, many of them, and I also think about picking it up. And yeah, same with Go. Yeah, with Lise.
It's funny that I was kind of talking to my cousin is an art professor at a community college in California, and mm-hmm. we were talking about broadly just this idea of becoming makers and kind of connecting with crafts and using our hands more and doing things that we really don't need to do anymore as humans, right? We can have AIs generate images, or we have like ultra high definition digital cameras. We can take amazing pictures, but like just getting back to basic craftsmanship and such. And I feel like chess is the same kind of thing. Of course, the problem that's emerged in chess is there have been all these cheating controversies where at the very highest levels of the sport, there have been all kinds of accusations of people using tools, AI in the background to help
them. Ramona has a good point too. Maybe the Queen's Gambit had something to do with it.
That helped. Maybe
definitely helped.
But that went back to the 1960s, right? And I think we're kind of looking back at what humans were doing decades ago to learn, like, how should we be spending our time now?
Right. Yeah. And I think this is also the, or maybe not for everyone. I'm not sure if I can generalize it like this, but for me, this is the highest form of living. If I can create things, and we are living now in a time with all of these AI tools that we have at hand, that everyone can create some. You know, you can create a GPT. You can create. It hasn't been ever so so easy to build a product, start a company. And provide value to the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's a lot you can do. Like I'm starting a new company. And I'm actively trying to find ways to automate as much as I can, either with generative AI or ML or just writing code, right? Or having AI help me write code. So it's an interesting point because I really want to push this idea of the solo founder unicorn as far as I can, right? And I think it's possible. Obviously. We'll see. If there's ever time to try it out, let's try it out. You know, I mean, there's a lot of good tools out there, and it forces you to rethink not just business operations, but sort of how, go to market and everything, right? It's pretty cool. So,
And you have this very knowledgeable co-founder at all times at your fingertips that you can ask questions where years ago you needed to talk to your tax advisor who is available in a week, and stuff like this. Because there are so many complex rules and regulations to adhere to. Now you can just ask it. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like with Perplexity. I'm using Perplexity AI like 100 times a day.
Perplexity is dope. I like that a lot. Do you use Perplexity, Matt?
Just a bit, not a ton. I tend to use ChatGPT. I guess I'm old school in that way now. Like that's the old thing.
Oh, you're such an artesian.
I know. Yeah.
What are you gonna do next? Like grow your own crops? Yeah, probably.
I'll get into woodworking. That's my next thing. So yeah.
You do live in Brooklyn though, so it seems like kind of a hipster thing to do there. It's just all that stuff. Let's talk about back to the book real quick. I'm curious. So you wrote a book on generative AI and AGI, and these are two topics I think that are, it seems impossible, at least for me, to pin down like where we are at this exact moment. It's sort of this like Heisenberg's uncertainty principle of the zeitgeist right now. But you went ahead and wrote a book on it. Like walk us through this. What was your process of thinking about a book about two very fast-moving topics in today's
That's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. So I started actually in January last year, 23, and or February, like I signed January and February started. And throughout the process, I realized, okay, now I'm writing and writing and have my research laid out, and you know, first the structure, then I, you know, here I need to go to this topic, here and this. And then as I'm going through the chapters, I'm especially the application fields. Yeah, there's in chapter three, I have the application fields, what exists and where this might go. And I realized whenever I consumed new updates and then on x.com and stuff, yeah, I saw, oh, wait, I just wrote about it. I wrote it in the like where it might go. I need to copy and paste it into where we are right now. Yeah. So then I needed to feel like, okay, where might this go now? but I had to rewrite so often, and I think I for sure it cost me like 2 months to rewrite and to be really as up to date as possible. Because in April also a lot has happened, yeah, with last year, with the whole autonomous AI agent movement. So we had a time at around Easter where every 48 minutes something big came out, and then AutoGPT, then this, then baby AGI, and I almost like following up on all of this, because I thought, okay, this is a breakthrough, I have to absolutely double down. 48 hours later, oh wait, this is a breakthrough, I have to double down on that. And I was just running and chasing, and researching takes the time away from writing the book. And I also had a full-time job next to it. I was the generative AI lead also for EMEA at Infosys Consulting. I forgot to mention that in the beginning. And there was busy times. So there was a lot of double work, but I'm happy that it's now done, saved. And actually, congrats. I then wrote it also in a way where like, okay, this is like lots of projections that already happened actually now in the last couple of like video generation, talking about that as well. So I'm happy that I didn't lose anything in between. Yeah, it's like it's still very, very relevant.
Even though like in general, how do we write things that will stand the test of time, that will still be relevant even a year from now? Like what is the strategy to do that?
You write religious books.
I don't know. Philosophy maybe. Yeah.
Philosophy. Yeah. Stuff like yours. Just like it's
or history.
Yeah.
Art.
Romance novels, actually. Yeah. I've actually thought about that. I might do one under a pen name. Like, but if you guys want to make a lot of money, by the way, in books, get into romance novels. These things sell. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. Especially billionaire romance novels, anyway. I think I've talked about this before. But yeah, if you guys want to make a lot of money in books.
Yeah.
It's actually my new company. So anyway. Yeah. Way to kill the conversation, Joe. So that's interesting, though. So do you feel like there's anything that you wish you would have written in your book? Anything where after it was published, you're like, geez, I really wish I would have covered that.
Yeah, I think I could more. I'm talking about robots as well. But I truly believe this year is an extreme year for robots, for humanoid robots. And I think I could write a bit more about that. But I'm writing about it, it's a very, very interesting concept. And with the language model, they can, like, the speaking is solved. They move very agile. Yeah. And if we look at the trajectory of what is possible, like, we see also an exponential sort of behavior there. Like, they are getting better and more agile and carry more and more weight. Like, it's super interesting topic there. Yeah. And I think I could also elaborate a bit more on, I think, because that speaks also to what you just now said, Joe. Matthew, you said it, like, how do you write these days? Yeah. And maybe a less time critical thing could be writing about even further things like Kardashev scale, you know, like type one civilization, type two civilization. I'm touching upon that, but I think there's more to discover. It's really fun to think about that.
Well, when I was a teenager, I was actually into Ray Kurzweil and all the old books back then. Yeah, yeah. Like, I was an early like singularity nerd. Now I'm not. Now I actually have different opinions on them. I actually yelled at somebody on a panel once who was at the Singularity Institute. So like, AGI will be here by 2030. I was like, you don't know that. Yeah. You're simply taking Kurzweil's exponential growth extrapolation and saying by this point on this graph, this is where it's going to land. That's literally all I did. But anyway, it's a curve fitting exercise. But the thing is, I noticed that his book, The Singularity Is Near, it still like sells really well. It's still in the top, one of the top AI books. In fact, I think it saw a bit of resurgence now that AI is cool again.
He also had an interview on the Lex Friedman podcast. So I think that.
Oh yeah, they'll boost your numbers a bit. So it's interesting. Yeah, just the conversations around this stuff. It feels like Yeah, writing a book on this topic, I don't know that I have the guts to do it. Honestly, it's it feels like, yeah, it feels like you're trying to just like grab water in a river.
Yeah, sure.
I mean,
lots of rewriting.
Oh, for sure. And the tech industry has been this way for at least 20 years. It feels so much worse over the course of the last 2 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Jason Taylor has a question for you. It's for you, Martin. Is there anything you don't want to see or think the data community should avoid? I'm guessing this is in the context of the discussion here, but you can open up to any topic you'd like.
What I don't want to see. I think leaving people behind in this. Yeah, what we see is that who is actually mostly benefiting from AI right now is the people that are already like pretty much on the front of the curve. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think we, in general, as a society, what I'm seeing in Europe, but also in the US and in Asia, I'm traveling between these three continents quite a lot. I see that the people that are not so much in touch with a cutting edge technology, but they could, but for various reasons are not. I think we don't make a good job in like taking them with us. Yeah, this is a multi-layered issue with different backgrounds. But I think what I don't want to see, and that's the question, is that that we have only like some elite part of the society that has basically utilized and 10x'd productivity and even made more revenue and gain and whatnot versus another part of it 80% or something struggling. I'm very positive that it won't be that the differentiation as much like 20 to 80%. I don't think it's going to be like that. It's going to be hopefully 80 to 20%. Yeah, that maybe not everyone will be, you know, benefit from AI. 100% not. That's not reality. But I would like to see us all benefit from it and have a prosper society.
How do we bring that about? Do we need people who are more vocal and advocate for these issues? Do we need public policy changes to make this possible?
Yeah. So education, a huge thing. I'm not sure if you read it, but Singapore has done something. Or was it Malaysia? I think it was Singapore, I think. They have released a sort of like a, I'm not sure if you say a bill or so, but they have released more than $1 billion dollar for AI upskilling. And everyone who is above 40 in Singapore, maybe it's Malaysia, but 90% sure it's Singapore. Everyone who is above 40 gets a $4,000, not credit or loan or anything, $4,000 on AI upskilling. Yeah, they have like a specific
platform. Yeah, that was Singapore. Yep.
Singapore. Yeah, and this is pretty. I think these are the right things to do. Yeah, to like, and everyone who is not 40, when they reach the 40, they get the $4,000 to upscale. So this is a great thing to do. Of course, Singapore is a small country compared to others, and not.
They're a bit more forward thinking on stuff. I know in the United States, like. I think we're trying to like figure out how, if we can just grow the number of homeless camps in most of our cities at this point, like it's almost the exact opposite. We're, I think we do everything we can to, you know, do exactly the opposite of what the good thing should be. So, yeah. But that's cool about Singapore. I think it's such a, they've always had a good model of like sort of the way forward, I thought. So,
yeah.
Absolutely. And Lee Kuan Yew, whatever's the founder of Singapore, I think he's a model example of just, I think, a brilliant leader. Mm-hmm. Probably one of the best leaders we've seen ever. Final question for Mark Keeling. This is Mark Keeling. What if the current AI craze goes the way of the previous ones? Is this surge really different than the past?
Yes, I think so. Everyone, if you have a tech background or not has access to these tools. They are actually very democratized, you don't need to pay much to have access to cutting edge tools, and you can start building. There is also a very strong open source community. Yeah? You can take language models and implement them in the tools or products that you are building. On one hand, you can build your products. On the other hand, you can also use it in order to be more productive. I think it has a much bigger reach and is also on par with humans. It's a good partner to go about your private and professional life. Yeah. In terms of brainstorming, you can open up your brainstorming. You can ask it, "Hey, I need to plan this and that. What are the options?" Then it starts giving you like the 10 options, and then you say, "What about this?" And it expands it. So this is what I mean with like this, like sort of on par partner to a certain degree. I think it's because of that and its reach. It's much more, and we see it also with ChatGPT. In 2 months, it had like 100 million users. Unprecedented before, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like the biggest difference between now and I would say prior machine learning booms and busts, of which I've been a part of a few of those. It's the big difference is the consumer angle of it, right? As you mentioned, ChatGPT was the but at the same time, it's interesting, right? Because if you read a lot of the press and sort of the economics of a lot of the current batch of AI startups and companies, what you pointed to earlier is correct, where the I think a lot of the bigger companies are taking the lead and taking a lot of the share. Like, it's really hard for AI startups to get some traction. I think especially when like almost half of your training, your money you raise is going towards training models, and it's hard. And it's a super competitive field. I mean, if you read like the information, which is a paid news source, but I mean, they're talking about how it's increasingly difficult for AI startups to raise money, and VCs are sort of backing off right now. But I think that, but you always have the Gartner hype cycle of like the peak hype, which I think we're kind of coming off of that. But the real applications are there, right? Like, I think what you suggested earlier was stuff like robots and multimodal stuff. Like, I think that's super promising. That's stuff we didn't have before, and that's going to have a lot of applications. But in the prior AI booms, really, I think it was mostly focused on business, and we're trying to shoehorn in, machine learning, I'll call it, into business processes, right? And some of that stuff works just great, and other times it's probably not a good fit, but mm-hmm. people use it now. Companies use it a lot. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's pretty fun. Cool. Yeah. So anything coming up, any events maybe that are happening that you guys might be speaking at?
Yes, absolutely. Matthew, I'm co-chairing a conference in Arizona, Phoenix, in July 4th to 7th. 4th and 5th is the, was it July or June? I'm not fully sure. Matthew, do you know?
I think it's June.
It was June. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I got on my calendar. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, so in June, 4th and 5th is workshop day, and then 6th and 7th we have an awesome speakers. The conference is called Generative AI Application Days. We had to change the name, Matthew, just in case you.
There was a conflict, right, with the name anyway. Yeah, but it's the same conference.
It's the same conference. Yeah, it was Generative AI World before, but now it's Generative AI Application Days. Maybe we can. I don't know. Is it possible to like put in the link somewhere?
We can put it in like on YouTube, Joe, and LinkedIn is a little bit tricky, but certainly on YouTube we could do that.
Hold on. Anyway, we'll put it in the link there. I can't find it right now. But should be good conference. I was invited to attend, but I'm on vacation, so I won't be able to attend, but that happens. So but I would love to attend. Should be fun.
I think it's going to be a Yeah, I think it's going to be a great, great conference. We have really great speakers from Microsoft, Google, IBM, Matthew, and we want to make it very interactive, yeah, so that all attendees really like go home with, okay, I've spoken to this expert, I've spoken to that expert.
Super cool.
Yeah, really looking forward to it. Just a lot of people to connect with in the community and kind of share ideas and thoughts about where things are going and how to better strategize in this environment.
Yeah, should be good. Anything else you want to announce or talk about before we close out? Any other cool stuff you're doing, Martin or Matt?
So I have on one hand this book, yeah, that I, maybe we can also drop the link somewhere. I'm now working on a startup and I'm on fundraising, but still in stealth mode, so I cannot announce much. Yeah, but it's a very, very exciting sphere that we are all in. Yeah, and I believe AI agents will also have a huge role in all of this.
Nice. Looking forward to hearing your announcement when it becomes public.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Matt, you got anything going on?
Let's see. We have a workshop coming up in May, right, Joe?
Like, yeah, Malaga, Spain. Yeah, yeah, G on the Beach. So we're doing a Fundamentals of Data Engineering workshop. So if you happen to be at that conference, come check it out. It's very likely we'll be doing more of these workshops going forward. I think we're using G on the Beach as sort of a launching pad on that. But yeah, so come check that out. So Malaga, Spain, beginning of, I think it's what, May 10th is the date of our workshop there. So
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. In the meantime, I'm going to be stateside. I got actually the next few weeks off. Doing Matillion's deep dish event on was April 23rd. Dremio subsurface on May 2nd. I'm flying to Spain. Then back. I think I have an event in London in May. So I don't know. Whatever. It's going to be nice to actually hang out. I literally just got back from Paris yesterday. So I'm just glad to not be flying for a bit.
When are you in London?
What was that? For May 20th ish. Yeah.
I'm on the 25th in May in London.
Nice. You had the generative AI conference.
Yeah. Marketing.
We'll see you there. Nice. Dope. Yeah. Well, cool. Anyway, go get Martin's book, everybody. Looks cool. I haven't read it, but Martin's a cool dude and he writes good books, and so you should get it and they'll make your life complete and and you'll be a better person as a result of that. So cool. Yeah, anyway, good to see everybody. Next week we have Cedric Chen from Singapore actually on the show. So one of my favorite writers and thinkers in the world, so really honored to have him on the podcast next week. And got an action-packed group of people coming up, so see y'all later. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Martin.
Thanks for joining.
Yeah, see you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Really.
Anytime. Appreciate it.